everybody, and welcome to
Nerd
Girls.
I think that was all three of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. All right. Before we get started, I want to take a moment to say that as residents of Los Angeles County, we acknowledge our presence, including virtual presence, on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of Indigenous people who are variously referred to as the Gabrielino Tungva people and Keech Nation. I am your host, Bridget, pronouns she, hers.
Hello, I'm Jen with a G, pronouns she, her, hers. How's it going, everybody?
And I am Caroline. I am joining yet another Hawkeye episode to talk to my wonderful, wonderful friends about this episode.
Yeah.
What an episode. Oh my gosh. Like, literally for me, it was like the beginning was like, ah! And then like the end, I was like, ah! Even louder. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, this episode, it's like last episode, we had so many questions. And this episode is like, answers, 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 answers.
Yep. So many answers.
Do we feel, though, that we got all the answers that we wanted?
Oh, no. Hell no.
No, because, like, there are still some big reveals left for us, like, exactly what Eleanor is up to and also who owns the watch. Like, that's still kind of in the air. So, you know, there's still some mystery left to go for the finale. But, you know, I think that this does kind of help assuage my concern about there just being way too many mysteries. Like the fact that this was able to kind of lay out a lot of stuff very quickly. I guess we still technically don't know what Jack's deal is, but...
But do we care, though? Like, do
we?
Don't
know. Yeah, of course, that's the thing. We don't care, so...
No. There's too many conspiracy theories running around. I could care less about his conspiracy. I just want to know about Eleanor, the Kingpin, and Kazi, man. That's all I want.
Yeah. Maybe this will actually just be the last we see of Jack. Like, he just gets locked up and everyone forgets about him.
Imagine. But then I'll just feel like, oh, even, like, just, like, even more the sense of, like, my time has been wasted.
it's the same
logic with, like, Clint dying. I'm just like, no, at this point, you literally cannot, okay? I would be too angry and bitter, okay? It'll be my villain origin story.
Yeah, nah. They got us in too deep, ladies. Way too deep.
Yeah. Although I have to admit, this is like the one scene where I found Jack entertaining is when he's getting arrested and like nobody cares and he doesn't care either. He's just like, oh, you called the police. That was the right thing to do in the circumstance. I have clearly been framed. I will get out. Bye. See you later. Like how... totally, completely, like, nonchalant he is. It's like, Jack doesn't even care about Jack.
Quote of the day.
Truly, though. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
He's so boring. He's lost interest in his own plot line.
He cut his own plot thread. That's
He's like, oh, the hell with this.
Yeah. He was sick of the being part of the plot sweater and just, like, pulled his own thread out, and now he's off in the universe somewhere.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. And who knows if he really was framed or if he's part of a bigger plot, because I really do believe he killed his uncle or whatever. Everything else, give or take, whatever, tax fraud, whatever. Again, I'm more focused on the fact that Eleanor and the Kingpin are a thing, which I know we had all talked about last time, but I'm pleased with the actual confirmation and a visual on the Kingpin, one of my favorite villains in the Marvel Universe. Oh my gosh, I am thrilled.
Yeah, I am excited too, because again, I love Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin in Daredevil, and so it'll be really fun to see him get to interact with this bigger universe here. And also, I feel like I'm really glad that, to me, it seems like they sort of set out this reveal and kind of stuck to their guns about it. Like, everyone predicted that this was who it was, and I feel like we've been seeing recently TV shows be kind of like, oh no, the fan theorists figured us out, let's change it somehow. And I feel like here they're like, nope, this is the clearest answer to this question, and this is the answer. Like, they just kind of rely on, this is a good twist in and of itself, even if you see it coming.
No, you're totally right. That was very solid.
And also, like, you know, not everyone is gonna know who Kingpin is or, like, what, you know, I don't, like, you know, the people who aren't, like, super comic fans or even, like, just super Marvel MCU fans who keep up with, like, fan theories and everything or who, like, you know, are not listening to amazing podcasts like ours to explain, like, certain things, right? Like, I say that jokingly, but like, but no, yeah. Really, like, you know, they're like, I think also there's,
wait, you're saying that there are people out there who don't listen to this podcast.
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
What? My heart.
I don't know. It's kind of hard to believe, but maybe it's true.
Yeah, no, there are civilians out there who do not know about Nerd Alert Girls, but it's okay. We will reach them somehow, some way. But no, but like, you know, I think it's still like, you know, I always try to think from that perspective, at least like a little bit, even as like the Marvel super fan who knows like not everything, but like a good portion of like stuff floating around in terms of Marvel. Like what that experience is, which is like, who's that bald guy? You know? Like you know. Yeah, and if you are one of those people and you happen to have found us, welcome, and Kingpin. Actually, do either of you want to give a little bit of background on Kingpin and, like, your experience with him and, like, what you think, how you think it, like, all, like, how Hawkeye ties it all together? Like, is he in a, like, I mean, I think, Caroline, you've already kind of covered it, but, like, in terms of an effectively solving at least one of the mysteries we have so far and how he ties into the story and everything.
Well, I don't know him as well in the comics. So, Jen, do you want maybe do comics and I'll kind of swoop in and talk Daredevil and I think just Daredevil. I mean, hopefully everyone out there has seen Into the Spider-Verse. Although, again, I am very sad to admit that there are probably people out there who have not seen Into the Spider-Verse.
They're uncultured and it's fine because we're telling them right now, watch it if you haven't.
Yeah, please go see Into the Spider-Verse. You know, do that. Be good to yourself.
Yes, exactly. So good, folks. But, for, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, that movie might be some people's only knowledge of the Kingpin, which I get it, you know. Most people, like, aren't comic readers or didn't grow up on the animated version of Spider-Man, because that was my first intro to Kingpin when I watched that 90s animated Spider-Man series. It was so good. It took up all my hours. I wanted to watch it instead of homework. So the Kingpin, he was always Spider-Man's adversary. He's one of the ones that just always got away because he has New York under his thumb. He is a crime lord through and through, has connections to everything. Everyone has blackmail and dirt on everyone. Like, I'm actually genuinely surprised he never figured out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, at least in the show. Maybe it's different in the comics. But he's one of those untouchable bad guys. Even though, you know, he has all these people doing the dirty work for him, it's never traced back to him. He covers his tracks very well. And there are times where he uses his money, his power, and his connections, but sometimes he gets his own hands dirty because he's a pretty powerful dude because of his stature. And yet he still gets away with it. It's insane what he gets away with, what he got away with in the show, what he got away with in the comics. Because when it comes to the comics, I only saw him as like a supporting villain. You know, he never really had his own thing, but mostly because I was reading other comics rather than Spider-Man itself. But he was in a couple of issues of the Moon Girl series. And even though he wasn't overt, it was still pretty menacing knowing, like, oh, crud, he's here. Oh, crud, he's here. Okay, he's going to be pulling strings. What's he going to do? So he's always been this menacing figure. And I honestly thought he was just a quote-unquote Spider-Man villain. But to hear that he's in Daredevil, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll give that show a watch. You know, I was always interested before, but I'm like, it's just one of those things. I'll watch it one day. But knowing that he's here, I'm like, okay. It makes sense because, of course, again, Kingpin, crime boss, Matt Murdock, lawyer. Yeah, I can see how Daredevil would get ticked off that this dude wipes his tracks, looks all innocent, or buys his innocence from, like, judges that he's, like, manipulated or flat-out blackmailed. You know, this guy is insane. Am I, surprised that Eleanor is working for him? Not really, no, because she seems shifty from the start that we've already said. So the fact that he's finally made an appearance, I'm just like, yes! This is happening! Oh my gosh, this is happening.
Yeah, that's a really good, I think, intro to Kingpin and kind of overview of who he is that on the one hand, you know, meant from a mental perspective, he's very smart, he's very cunning. Just from a pure, like, power perspective, like, that's the thing is, like, he can't shoot lasers out of his eyes, but he has real world power. Like, he has the kind of power that he can, like you said, do basically anything and get away with it because he's got the money, he's got the connections to cover it up. And he has the physical power in that he's a big dude and he often, you know, delivers these very brutal beatdowns just through like sheer brute strength. I think that, you know, I said I wasn't going to talk too much about it Into the Spider-Verse, but I do think it's a really good intro to Kingpin because I think it gets one that he's scary because he's the main driving antagonist. He's pretty intimidating. He also straight up kills one of the Spider-Men, the Peter Parker of Miles's dimension or multiverse or universe. So, you know, that's kind of shocking, like right in the beginning of the story. And, you know, we don't see it, but he presumably just like bashes his chest in.
Yep.
So like that's scary right off the bat. But then there's this other layer to him, which is interesting in that movie, which is that everything he's doing it to try and bring his family back. And that's another aspect that sometimes does show up is that he's someone who, you know, is extremely ruthless, but does have this strong connection to either his girlfriend or wife, or sometimes he has a family that he really does care about, or his friends or, you know, connections like that, that kind of do humanize him. So, you know, it's not just like we cut back to him, like, you know, counting his money or beating up superheroes or stuff like that in his spare time. Like he actually does have friends and family, which is, you know, he's just, he's got layers to him. He's very bad and very scary, but does have these slightly, you know, kind of sympathetic angles. In the Netflix Daredevil series, which he has been a Daredevil villain for quite some time, as far as I can tell. I've only read a few Daredevil comics, so I'm not, you know, I don't have a, like a full history of the character, but he's one of the main Daredevil antagonists. And like you said, Jen, I think there's a great reason for that in that, you know, both of them are people who have kind of a public face and a private face. And they, so there's this sort of foil that happens of like, Daredevil is maybe more like Kingpin than he would like to admit, even though, you know, his public side is very much by the books. But there's also this ideological battle between the two of, you know, in both his lawyer and his vigilante persona, Matt Murdock and Daredevil strive for justice, you know, and that is complicated. But so Kingpin makes a really strong ideological opponent for Matt Murdock and Daredevil, because both of those personas are driven by justice, both within the law and outside of the law. And Kingpin is this great perverter of justice. You know, he always gets away with the crimes he does. So that, I would say, is kind of the way I would sum up his relationship with Daredevil. Yeah.
The dude is a menace.
Okay, great. Thank you both for that context. Yeah. But so I mean, do you think he's a good fit for the Hawkeye series? I mean, I think he is with the whole Ronin and criminal underworld thing that, you know, Clint was involved in. I feel like it makes sense.
I agree as well. I think he's not someone who is going to work in like a story info about space, but if it's about like New York criminal underworld, then he's there.
That's our guy.
Yep, that's the guy. And then I think, Bridget, earlier you brought up a really good point about sort of these reveals and how, like, the people making these shows and these movies, like, have to be aware that they're making them, you know, both for people who are, you know, watching all of them and marathoning them and have read comics and are going through and, like, read articles and watch videos about the Easter eggs, but also for your casual viewer who maybe doesn't like always remember what happened in the last movie or hasn't seen, you know, hasn't seen Endgame since it last came out and doesn't remember a lot of it, or, you know, is just kind of checking in on one particular property because they think it's entertaining or they think it sounds interesting, as opposed to watching all of them. So I think that that's a really good point you make, and really good sort of lens to sometimes look at this and be like, hey, you know, is this something that just works for people who are not like mega invested in all of these little story beats and Easter eggs and things?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I don't know. I think it's just an important thing, especially for just me as like a, you know, commentator, to like keep in mind. It's just like, not everyone will have watched every single movie, you know, and that's totally fine. I totally get that. There is so much Marvel out there, you know, it's kind of overwhelming, but like, you know, and I also just feel like it's, I don't know, it's important to still keep like Marvel, even if it is a cinematic universe, like accessible, right? Like, and I, so, you know, like, if this is, like, the first, like, someone's first introduction to Kingpin, you know, I mean, obviously, we get so little of him, right? So, like, you know, it's hard to say, but, like, you know, I'm hopeful, since it's the same guy from Daredevil, in terms of, like, the portrayal of, like, you know, all of those characteristics that you two are mentioning about, like, you know, why he's intimidating and how he is the perversion of justice and, like, what are the, like, extra layers to him and all those things. You know, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Like, you know, it is only one more episode, so I can't imagine they'll do a whole lot. But you know what? I mean, they managed to establish Maya Echo as, like, an amazing new antagonist in, like, 3 seconds flat at the end of an episode that was, like, way more compelling than Jack Duquesne. So, like, you know, I have no doubt that it is possible to make Kingpin fearsome.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
if he is only present for a short period of time.
I mean, think about it. We've been talking about him for, like, 15 minutes and we've only gotten a glance.
Yeah, totally. And, I mean, I also feel like if you're someone who doesn't know who that is, I still think that the reveal would work, because it's, like, all we need to know is that he's a, like, bad, scary dude who runs underworld criminal stuff.
Yep.
You know? And also, I think just the name Kingpin is kind of indicative. It's, like, that's the term for someone who is, you know, the boss, the head, the number one, he's in charge. So to be like, that's the Kingpin, it's like, oh, wow.
Right. I mean, yeah, so the foreshadowing, like, the hints that, like, Clint drops, right, like, this is the big guy that I was worried about, you know, when he talks to Laura, and, like, you know, so even without that, you just, like, see, like, oh, like, Clint's, like, intimidated by this guy, that must be something, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so, right, you know, so he's, it's still, like, sort of a mystery, right? We're not quite sure. But, like, it's clear that this dude is bad news, and you know it's bad news that Eleanor is associated with him. But, all right.
Yeah. That's a really good point, that, like, we know Clint, and we know that Clint doesn't scare easily. So if he's worried about this guy, then this guy must be bad news.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, anything else about Kingpin? Because otherwise, I think we should probably just try to get back to the beginning and just go through the episode, if that's okay. Kind of got distracted by talking about Kingpin, but honestly, that's cute. It's a huge thing, so.
Yeah, I might have screamed a little. I'm not sure if it spooked my neighbors, but, you know, they should be used to hearing weird screams from me on Wednesdays in particular. I don't know, man.
Like, I could see your neighbors being like, oh, must be Marvel night.
Exactly. So yeah, that was super exciting. It was like, oh my gosh, he's back. This is awesome. You know, and yes, let's go back to the beginning. I had texted you guys in the group thread,
yes,
like 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever, like 5 minutes in, and I am slaying.
I know. And I also woke up early this morning because I had to go into the office, and I was like, oh no, I had planned to watch this for my lunch break, but no, not anymore. Gonna wait until I, you know, don't have to go to work immediately after, all emotionally devastated, like WandaVision. But
oh no.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you texted us so I could be emotionally prepared. I'm like, all right, if Jen is texting this, it means it's something Natasha related, which means the beginning is about Natasha and Yelena, and it's gonna make me sad. And it was true, but I was emotionally prepared, so thank you, Jen, for being the first foray to warn us.
You're welcome. I wasn't even sure if I was being overdramatic, because we all know that Infinity War scarred me and everything, but, like, I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And Caroline, I am so glad you watched the Black Widow movie so you can get a little bit of context there. Like, I know you would have been able to figure it out, but it's nice to have the context.
Caroline watched it the night before the Hawkeye episode dropped, just so, you know, she could come with the proper background knowledge in Yelena, and we love her for it. Thank you, Caroline.
Yes. Thank you. I felt bad last week for not doing my homework.
I did say it was worth watching just for Yelena.
Yeah, you did, and you were right. So yeah, and I think that was good too, because for me, I just kind of had the feelings from Black Widow kicking around in my head all day, and then I come home in the evening and, you know, as quickly as possible before we start recording, watch this episode, and like the first thing I get hit with is Yelena, and I'm just like, oh no, it's all so fresh in my mind. So I'm very glad I made that decision to watch that movie like right before this, because I think I got like maximum impact.
Oh, that's got it. Yeah, that's true. That is like quite an experience to have, to like just get exposed to the relationship and get invested in it, and then to see how she got snapped away for 5 years, and also like we realized that this explains that line in Endgame that Steve says, Caroline. I just feel like it's worth diving into that a little bit, just because it's something that like was like, for me.
Yeah, of course. So just, I think I was kind of hyper aware for references to Natasha and family, both throughout Endgame and Black Widow, because I have kind of a recurring frustration with the portrayal of the Avengers and the way in which people keep trying to say in the MCU that they're a family, despite the fact that they're not consistently like close with each other or even like in the same general area. Like they only live together for kind of short amounts of time off camera. And you know, that could be a whole long thing. But because of that, whenever someone's like, the Avengers are family, I'm like, no, they are not. That's not how family works. I mean, unless it's just a super, super distant family that never talks to each other.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, Caroline, don't you know how family works? I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah, never mind. Maybe
very close.
Yeah, maybe they are a family. They're just like, I guess not the kind of family they are trying to convince us that they are.
Okay.
The dysfunctional kind.
You're right. The Avengers are a dysfunctional kind. But the thing is, like, Natasha's family, with Alexei and Melina and Yelena, like that's a dysfunctional, very dysfunctional family, but it still feels like a family to me.
Yeah, definitely.
That's fair. But yeah, so yeah, talk about that line though from Steve in Endgame.
Yeah, so for me, I was, after having watched that, I was then confused by Steve saying in Endgame, when he's asked if Natasha had a family, Steve says, yeah, us. And I'm like, okay, there is no way that Natasha never told Steve about her, like her family. To me, I mean, I don't necessarily need her to have like gone into, you know, a huge amount of detail, or maybe he doesn't know their names, but she has to have told him about them at some point in their relationship. And yeah, so that was bothering me. And then today we see Yelena got snapped, and that way I can justify that line in my head as Natasha at some point, you know, in the grieving process told Steve that her little, you know, at some point when she found out, presumably told Steve that her little sister got snapped. And so now Steve is like, well, she's got us basically. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes more sense, honestly.
Yeah. So that gives peace to my Steve loving Roman Rogers loving heart. So thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to get too distracted by that, but
yeah, I'm very fond of trying to bend canon to make stuff work.
Bend canon to your will, Caroline.
Yes. If I can, I will try and make the canon work. So if I can't even figure out a reason for the canon to work, then I get very frustrated because I'm like, guys, I was meeting you halfway here, okay?
Yeah. But well, anyway, so back to the Hawkeye episode though. Like, so yeah, so she disappears, and then, you know, I really like visually the transformation though of like her disappearing and then reappearing the same second as you see the rune transform around her. was just very interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, we start off with her going back to what we saw at the end of the Black Widow movie, where she and I guess another fellow widow are looking around for other widows to unbrainwash them. And they track down this one woman who fights them all pretty well. You know, she held her own considering that there was two of them, you know, Yelena and Sonya, I believe was her name. I feel bad if that's not right, but yeah.
Oh, shoot, I don't even remember and I just watched it.
Right? But anyway, they take down Sonya only to find out she wasn't even brainwashed. She just happened to use her skills to, you know, make money off of it and lives quite well. They end up talking to her, kind of catch up a little. And Yelena, she goes to the bathroom only to get dusted. And then she comes back and everything has changed, indicating that change of time, seeing that Sonya has started a family and that her fellow widow who came with her was like, what the heck? You know, like Yelena was the only one who was dusted. But I'm guessing the widows put two and two together once they saw how the rest of the world was. Only for Sonya to have to break the bad news that, well, you know, she doesn't say that Natasha was killed, but let's be honest, that's what she said, and it hurt.
It cuts off, right, because Yelena is like, I have to call Natasha, I have to tell her that I'm okay, and I'm like, oh,
That line was what slayed me. I was slowly disintegrating, but that one was the fatal blow there. That was the KO.
That was what prompted you to text us at 6 in the morning.
Yes, that line right there, just, my gosh, punch to the gut, man. I didn't need that at 6 in the morning. I didn't need that.
Yeah. No, it was rough. And for me, like, there was something very poignant about the little joke one of the other widows makes about how, like, Yelena and Natasha are going to get an apartment in New York and they're going to live out their Sex and the City, you know, fantasy or something. And I'm just like, the idea of just like the two of them having a little apartment together in New York and getting to just again be like normal sisters for 5 minutes. I'm like, no, the world can't let them have that, can it?
No, it can't. There's fan fiction out there for it and I will look for it. But in the MCU, it's not happening and it hurts me all the more.
No, it will it not hurts. Be, but...
I must fix it. Fick.
I know. Poor Yelena. It's like... But yeah, I agree. I really did love the visual of like suddenly the bathroom changing and then her walking out and the other lady just being kind of unfazed by it because she's just had so much happen in her life.
They've seen it all at this point.
Yeah, she's definitely seen it all. I also like when they spray the red goo on her and they're like, okay, it's going to be hard at first. She's like, you ruined my rug.
Right.
Yeah.
A $2,000 rug. Wait, you're not brainwashed? No, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Although, I mean, I guess that does ask another question of like, so are there other sort of Black Widow units that I don't want to say only underwent the mental conditioning, because that is, you know, you can do a lot to a human without, you know, using quote unquote like brainwashing science magic drugs to break them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to downplay mental conditioning as being like a lesser thing, but it's not quite the same as like chemical brainwashing that they have in the Black Widow movie. So it makes me wonder if there's other Black Widows out there that didn't undergo that treatment.
Well, yeah. I'm sure from like Natasha's generation, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Good point. Because I'm thinking her generation was more about the mental torture, but then Yelena's generation was more of the chemical brainwashing. So, yeah, there's probably a good mix out there. It'll be tough for Yelena to figure it out should she ever get back into that mission, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good point, too, because, like, you know, there's not much of an age difference between Natasha and Yelena, so there's probably going to be a lot of widows out there, like, in their, you know, 30s, late 20s, who are kind of a mix of both. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Man, they're going to go through a lot of wasted antidote and ruining rugs. Bummer.
Aw, dang it. Man, that job was already hard enough to then have them, like, waste some of the antidote on people who aren't chemically brainwashed.
Too bad there's no way for them to distinguish, but I'm hoping that they address that later on, because I really, really hope that we see more of Yelena, you know, after Hawkeye, and it seems like we are. I'm down for that. Yes, please. Thank you. And for now, I'm so glad that she's here in Hawkeye, and not just to, you know, punch Clint in the face, but just... Oh my gosh, her and Kate's interaction was gold.
Oh my gosh, yeah, let's talk about that scene. It was so odd, right? But like, I felt in a good way. Like, you know, it opens with like she's at this burned down apartment, and I made mac and cheese, and, you know, and like is going through her like. Cutlery, right? Like one fork, you know,
one spoon. Like,
this is not cutlery, Kate Bishop, right? Or she says her full name all the time, right? Kate Bishop, and you know, is just like it. I love dialogue like that, though, when like one character is talking about one thing and one character is talking about another thing, and they're just totally talking past each other, you know, because they have just such different goals in their conversation, you know, and to find like eventually finding their way in the middle. You know, to getting at the root of it. But like, I always love dialogue like that, though, you know? And so it's just like talking straight past Kate, you know, and just like being all homey and like doing the girl talk. Is how she refers to it, you know, and then lays it on her like, oh yeah, I've come to kill a Clint. It's just like, you know, but it's that fatalism that Caroline mentioned coming out there, you know?
Yeah, because since I only recently watched Black Widow, we were talking about it a little bit before we started recording, and I was talking about one of the things I like about Yelena is that I feel like with some of the other superheroes, the kind of the quips or like the sarcasm sort of comes from a place of like not taking the stakes of the story seriously, which like, you know, sometimes makes for good jokes, but for me, sometimes I find frustrating because it deflates the tension. And I feel like with Yelena, because of where she's coming from and also like Florence Pugh's delivery, Yelena comes off as someone who just does not care about a lot of what is going on. Like, obviously there are some things she cares very deeply about, but when it comes to something like talking to Kate, like a lot of the conversation, she's able to just kind of toy with her because Yelena knows that she has the upper hand in this situation. Like, she knows that Kate is a rookie. Like, I love that part where Kate's like, I'm so glad I didn't kill you. And Yelena just like bursts out laughing.
You kill me? Oh.
Yeah.
So just like, to me, I love how Yelena shows up and she's like, well, I was waiting for you. I got hungry. I made mac and cheese. You want some? It's good. You know, just she does not care. And also she's really showing... You know, she's kind of playing with Kate a little bit psychologically before she gets down and they get serious, in that she's like, I'm not at all intimidated by you. I came into your place. You know, she didn't break in because she's too good for that. So she came into her place and now she just has the upper hand, and they're going to have this interaction on Yelena's terms. So,
yeah, that whole conversation, man.
There was a moment where I did start to wonder, like, all right, where is this going? Like, why are you here, Yelena? It's not to make Kate your friend. Like, obviously I want that to happen, but like, this is not why you're here. And and then when she asked, like, well, where's Clint, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay, there it is. Okay. You know, I needed that moment, you know, which is like, yeah, okay, that's why you're here. And, you know, Kate says she doesn't. And I like that, like, Yelena can tell that she's not lying, you know, and just like, okay. You know, isn't like, you know, say like Maya is like, you're lying. I mean, even though Clint was lying, but like,
yes. You know,
that comes from more of a place of like emotion, which is not bad, but like, it's just kind of like, no, I'm positive. Right. Whereas like, I don't know, the Yelena looks way more detached, I guess.
Yeah.
In terms of,
yeah, definitely.
You know, yeah. But yeah.
And again, I feel like that really fits with, where she's coming from as a person. Like, I think for Maya, it seems like a lot of what she's doing, even though it's interesting because both women are on these revenge missions, for Maya, it does feel more personal. And for Yelena, it's like, I think they both, you know, love the family member to, I don't know, the same extent, or I don't want to quantify that necessarily, but like both of them have strong feelings at their core. But I think Maya's generally just more open with them or doesn't see them as a bad thing. Whereas I feel like Yelena, because of, you know, what she's been through in her life, has to have a level of disconnect between those. And also for her, she was trained to have that be her job. And part of that was like interacting with people is part of the job. You know, this whole question of like, when is it real and when is it fake when you're talking to someone
yeah.
in this kind of scenario? So.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I do. And, you know, something that was interesting that I saw on YouTube was like playing at the parallel in terms of Clint talking about the best shot he ever took was the one he didn't take. And like took one look at Natasha and like just said like she, you know, she wanted out. I could tell, you know, and doesn't do it. Right. And like, you know, with the ending of the last episode where like, you know, Kate's whole, you know, positioning the bow and arrow and, she, you know, she sees Yelena and she doesn't shoot. And, you know, I know it's like it's spun into a joke, but there was like that parallel in terms of like, you know, this new Hawkeye looking at this, you know, new Black Widow, so to speak, and that subtle parallel there. I thought it was interesting that was pointed out in like a couple of fan videos I saw on YouTube after the episode came out. It's interesting.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out, because I hadn't noticed that before you said that. And I also think, yeah, there's a lot of interesting parallels going on here. There's the parallels between Maya and Yelena. There's the parallels between Maya and Clint. There's the parallels between Clint and Kate and Yelena and Natasha in the kind of Hawkeye and Black Widow dynamic. So yeah, just a lot of parallels.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't even realize half of them until you started saying them. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, as we're unpacking it more and more together. I mean, that's what's fun about doing this podcast, right? Is that we peel back more layers, I think, than we would have otherwise on our own.
So, basically, yeah.
But, yeah, anything else about their conversation, you know, Kate's and Yelena's?
I did want to talk about kind of the more serious part of it, because I remember last week we were talking about the idea of Kate kind of getting a perspective shift or like a reckoning to look harder at who Clint is. And Yelena is coming in saying like, you know, basically saying you have to take a look at what he did and, you know, really think about it. Is this a good person? And the way Kate is kind of trying to dodge it, she's like, well, you know, there's when you do this, there ends up being collateral damage.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm like, Kate, that's something you got to think about really hard, what you consider to be collateral damage and what you consider to be acceptable collateral damage. If you want to be a superhero, please think on that. And so I really appreciated that conversation, because Yelena's perspective is, again, much more cynical and Kate's is much more idealistic. And also I kind of think that Yelena occasionally says stuff that I am feeling very much when, Kate's like, he's an Avenger, and Yelena's like, what does that word even mean?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, it got real a few times, honestly. I was just like, oh, man. Because I'm thinking like, okay, Kate, you're still relatively new at this. You know, you're going to learn some hard truths pretty soon. I get that. But the fact that she was just so, like, defensive for Clint, like, on the one hand, I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, ooh, you know, I don't know, man. Yelena's got a point, but at the same time, do I want him to die? Not at this point. No, we too much at this point. Way too much. But one thing I want to quickly point out, a shout out to Kate. You know, she's very perceptive when she points out to Yelena, like, you use my full name as if to remind me that you know it and that you know stuff about me.
Yeah, it was subtle, and I didn't even notice it until Kate pointed it out.
Yeah, seriously, the part of my brain that binged watched Criminal Minds in my teen years was just like, yep, that's the psychological game there. Yep, that's what she's doing, you know. The fact that Kate picked up on that was pretty impressive, you know, and I'm just like, yeah, Yelena does her homework. Just, okay,
but
you know.
It's another example, though, of, like, Kate having excellent social skills and also terrible social skills that, like, you know, You know, because she picks up on the psychological manipulation, but doesn't seem to register, like, you know, collateral damage and how that would feel for someone to hear, as someone who lost somebody, and, you know, like, it's like my sister's collateral damage. It's like, ooh, yeah, Kate, stop. You know, it's not the first time that she's made me go like, ooh, ouch, okay.
Yeah, know? And it's interesting because going on that thread of collateral damage, would she feel the same if Yelena were to say, like, your dad was collateral damage during the Battle of New York, you know? I don't know if she hadn't thought of that or what, but I'm just like, yeah, that's not how that works, Kate.
Yeah, but we're pretty sure that he got murdered by the mom anyway, so, I, you know, anyway.
Yeah. And then I also think with Kate, I mean, you know, I think if she was somebody, coming from somebody else, I would find that collateral damage line. Like, as is, I'm like, ooh, Kate, you got to think about that. But, like, I still don't think from another kind of person, I would be like, oh no, that is wrong. But I think with Kate, she is coming from a place of being like, you know, she just recently had that conversation with Clint talking about how Natasha was, you know, the best of them and how much he misses her. And so I think she does come from a real place of knowing that Clint would never intentionally hurt Natasha. And, you know, as frustrated as we all are with Clint and with Natasha dying for him, he did try, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that takes me to, I know I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but to that line later when, like, Clint's by himself and he's at the Avengers, you know, I guess, memorial thing of where the first Battle of New York was, and he's talking to Natasha after have taken out his hearing aid, by the way, which I thought was an interesting choice. But mm-hmm. he says, you know, like, oh, you know, you did this just for a stupid orange rock. And, you know, he says, I replayed that a million times in my head, hoping for a different outcome. And it's such an emotional scene, you know, and it's well acted, and it hits you in the feels. But when he said that, I could not help but say out loud, as he said, I replay that a million times in my head, hoping for a different outcome. I immediately said, same. I couldn't resist it. That's what came out of my soul in that moment. Like, it was such an emotional moment, and I just, like, I'm just like, same, Clint, honestly.
Oh.
Yeah.
I feel more favorably disposed toward Clint because of his acknowledgement of this fact. Like, I think considering the circumstances that, again, he did try very hard to sacrifice himself. He and Natasha fought each other over who was going to be the real big hero, and Natasha won and she was the big hero. But I think it's good to see that that weighs as heavily on Clint as it does. Like, I wouldn't want him to be able to walk away from that and be like, well, too bad, Miss Natasha, but you know what? It's cool to be back with my family.
Right.
Like, that would be very frustrating. So to me, I really did appreciate that scene and the scenes before it of just, you know, I ended up feeling for him, even though I didn't expect to because of the guilt he is carrying around.
Yeah, no, and that's real.
Agreed.
And, like, just, like, the way that he talked about her with such affection and, like, you're loyal and stubborn, you always had to win. I'm just like,
aww.
Crying. But that is who she is, and just, oh, yeah, it hurt me. But it was a good kind of hurt, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, oh my gosh. That scene kind of got me, too. Not as much as that first 5 minutes, but yeah. Got me. And honestly, I'm really happy that the show is talking about Natasha's death. They did not brush it aside, but it's not like in your face kind of thing, you know, like how certain things do with a certain Iron Man. But anyways.
Subtle,
it's
Jen.
Like, it's, you're welcome. But yeah, they talk about it because, please, yes, talk about it. This is the guy that she was closest to, you know? And let it affect him. Let it weigh on him. Even though, yeah, he got to be with his family again at the cost of her. Yeah, it's gonna hurt. Yes, thank you for delving into that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought his last line was interesting when he says, you'd be really mad at me for what I'm about to do. And then his subsequent kind of conversation with Laura. Yeah, I think that's interesting. I'm like, I wonder what part of it she would be mad about, like taking a dumb risk or, you know, confronting Maya to begin with or putting on the Ronin costume. Like, it's just, it's interesting to kind of turn over in my head. Like,
what kidding.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what that was either. I'm still like kind of running circles around it. I think I need to like steepen that a little bit more to like really figure out like what exactly would she be mad about.
Right?
But yeah, but going on to that conversation with Laura, like I want so much more of Laura Barton's story. What is her story? Like, the more pieces they give me, the more that I want. I'm greedy like that. Right? especially for like a female character.
Yeah. Well, the problem is they're giving us a lot of crumbs and not the whole cookie, you know?
Like, I want that cookie.
Crumbs are cool, I guess, but you want a cookie.
Yes. Please, cookie me.
I don't know. I'm starting to lean in harder to the belief that maybe she is the one who holds the watch, is like the holder of the watch, because I don't know, like, especially the way that, like, when they're signing off and she says, you know that I understand better than anyone else. And I'm like, this really feels like she has lived this life.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That was also an interesting sign off of, like, what is it about, you know, because you can't even say that, like, she understands what it's like to lose the family, because, you know, she, as far as she knew, she was having a picnic one day and then she blipped back and everything was different and Clint was gone for some reason. And then she called him or he called her. I don't remember exactly how it went, but then it's like, wait, I've been dead for like 5 years. What happened?
You know? Right. Yeah. I don't know what she meant by that, but that stuck to me too.
Yeah. I'm just like, are you the owner of the watch? I don't know. I'm until I'm proven otherwise, I'm going to assume that like she is, yeah, the owner of this watch, because like, I don't know. It just feels like a way to like wrap up that plot thread in a way that makes sense. Like, they're dropping hints that I feel like it could make sense if they did go that route.
Yeah. And also, like, we've had our kind of out of the series reveal, you know, like Kingpin is a character that hasn't shown up in this series before, and then he gets brought in. So to have them bring in another character for the watch reveal, I feel like would be a little bit overkill. Whereas if it's a character we have already met within the context of the story, then it would feel more satisfying to me. And also, if it were Laura, it would be more satisfying, because I just want there to be like a backstory for Laura.
Oh, for sure. Context.
Give me the Laura cookie.
Yeah, we need more Laura. She just impresses me with every appearance that she has in this series.
Yeah, me too. Like, I really, in this, appreciate, like, her conviction and also her willingness to face, like, this very hard truth of, like, hey, this very dangerous person has your name and has the kids' names. And she's like, well, we're as far away as we can get. And, you know, I know you'll figure out the rest, kind of a
thing.
Yeah. And again, I'm not saying that someone being in that situation, being like, oh no, that is scary, isn't a valid reaction. But I do think there is something very kind of impressive about someone who can hear that and be like, you know, I am not going to run. I'm not going to hide. I am going to sit this out, kind of a thing. Which, again, to me suggests that she maybe has some kind of powers or some kind of superheroine thing going on. Because, like, if she did, that would make sense of her thinking, like, oh, does someone want to come up here and try and hurt my kids? Well, I'll be waiting for them, you know?
Ooh. How cool would that be? Yes, please. I want to see Laura Barton fight. I want that.
I don't know. Somehow that reminds me a little bit of Shang-Chi's mother, a little bit. Like, if they do go that route, like, if she has, like, secret powers or something. Yeah, I don't know.
I'd definitely be down for that.
But, yeah, we'll see where they go with that. But, yeah, I mean, once again, though, we get, like, a honest, open, like, conversation between the Bartons. And, like, I just appreciate it. And I can never stop talking about how much I appreciate it. Because, again, as we talked about so much last episode, it's refreshing. We never get this. Yes. So
never get this.
But yeah, in the meantime though, so Kate, finally returns home, right? And talks to Eleanor and just says, please just look into Jack. I'm sorry. Like, we did find stuff about him, you know, and then next thing you know, he's getting arrested. Right. And like, actually, before we get to the resting part, like, for like Eleanor, like, she reacts with like deep concern, and I'm like, you know,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was just like, I don't believe you. You know, I mean, like, I thought it was well acted. Like, I felt like she was good at pretending she was really concerned, but I just could like feel like, no, this is not real.
Yeah, it's, once again, I'm going to keep using the term frustrating to talk about Eleanor. And I'm sorry if I did that a whole bunch last episode. But I'm going to do it again this episode because it is frustrating, since if you just took like this episode in isolation, this is kind of the twist I was talking about, where like she seems really concerned and very grounded at the beginning of the episode. And then we get the reveal that, oh, she's actually working with the Kingpin and she called out a hit on Clint. And I'm like, if we got like genuine seeming concerned, like down to earth, like, you know, relatable, likable Eleanor for this whole series, I feel like that reveal would be so much more of a, oh no, this is real bad. Or like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Whereas at this point, we're like, yeah, that makes sense. Checks out. And like Bridget said, it's hard to, even though, you know, the actresses are doing a lovely job in that scene. And also, I feel like some of the stuff she says to Kate is very sort of down to earth. Like, you know, you're going to be doing what you want to do. It's just, it won't look like what it looked like when you were a little kid. Like, you know, to me, that's some real solid mom advice.
Oh yeah, agreed.
So it's like they were doing a good job with that scene, but I'm like, the problem is that this episode has the baggage of all the previous episodes where her characterization is just all over the place.
Yeah, truly. I was just like, I'm not buying it, Eleanor. I'm not really buying it. You know, despite the mom advice and everything, and the fact that she was helping Kate clean up her wounds and everything, I was just like, I don't know, something's fishy here. And sure enough, when that ending happened, I'm like, yeah.
I will say I didn't expect it to be like revealed that she called the hit on Clint. And I don't know if it's just because the end credit scene with, you know, of Black Widow, where, you know, it's Julie Louis Dreyfus, I don't remember her like character name, like passes that, you know, folder to Yelena. I guess she was doing it on behalf of Eleanor Bishop, but like, I don't know. I just was like, wait, oh, like it was an oh moment, but like, I think more because of that end credit scene, like, oh wait, that's not who I expected to be the one to call the hit or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get you.
Yeah, I feel like that was actually a solid twist because, you know, we still don't know a lot about Julia Louise Dreyfus, or I think her character's name is like Valentina. Or Valeria,
that's
or
her name.
Like
yeah.
That. But because we don't know much about her other than she has some kind of organization that employs Yelena and now Walker, so she's collecting kind of morally ambiguous people, and she herself seems extremely, extremely shady.
Yeah.
That's all we know about her. So it's like, to me, it makes a lot of sense that if you wanted someone assassinated, you would call her if you knew her, you know?
Yeah.
But also, I wasn't expecting that to be the case because, yeah, I was expecting it to be like, oh, yeah, my boss told me that that's the target. And that's the only, I don't ask any more questions than that. You know, that's my job.
And I appreciate that when Kate and Yelena were talking, that Kate points out like, hey, you might want to look into who pulled the hit, you know, what does that say?
I'll say one more thing about Eleanor and weird characterization, and then we can finally move on. But like, I just like, just something else that was like weird, I guess, when he does get arrested, like her like non-reaction, right? She's comforting her daughter, and then like the way she like looks at him kind of like with the almost like a blank stare, and like it feels like, again, it's like, oh yeah, she's the one who set him up, and I bet she's the one who murdered his uncle and set him up to, and like let him take the fall, is kind of my theory on that.
Yeah, that I like that theory. I feel like that's a very neat way to kind of tie a bow onto that plot line, which is like,
yeah,
when I heard that Simon Callow was in this, I was like, oh wow, that's cool. And then it's like, he's in one episode and then he gets murdered immediately. And I'm just like, that seems like the waste of a good actor, but, you know, you guys are the bosses here.
I don't know that actor very well, but once he was murdered, I'm just like, eh, okay. I don't feel sad about it. I'm not disgusted by it. It just, okay, bye. So, yeah.
And now it's just kind of hanging out there as another subplot that, like, needs to get tied up. So if it turns out that Eleanor murdered him in a way that very conspicuously tied back to, you know, Jacques of the sword obsession, and then framed him for it, that I think would be fine by me. I'm like, yeah, there we go. That ends that for us. So
yeah, Jack is probably just some tax evading weirdo or something. I don't know, man.
He didn't seem to, he was so like laissez-faire about the whole thing. I'm just like, you know, I actually don't think he killed his uncle. Like, yes, it's like he just was so nonchalant, just, and I don't know, I thought before it was just an act, but even as he's being arrested, and I'm just like, I think you're actually innocent of this, at least. So, like, you know, nothing, I guess they're arresting him because of the whole, like, being the CEO of the money laundering thing. I guess he's not being arrested for his uncle's murder, but I don't know, it just kind of got me thinking, you know, you feel like small potatoes. You always have, but even more now you feel like.
And I kind of do love how his reaction to, like, getting arrested for running a shady company is, what? I've never worked a day in my life.
Right? That was so good.
Yeah, I like that his defense is like, I am way too lazy to run a criminal organization. Seriously, guys.
Like, nah, man, I don't have time for that. I've got a life to not live.
I kind of actually believe him, so, you know.
Yeah, I can accept that. So that happens. Eleanor is clearly behind something. And we move on to the next scene. Ronan makes his appearance again, shooting an arrow to the Trust of Bros windshield, just to say, like, yeah, we're ending this now. We're meeting. Let's do this. Come alone. Maya's not gonna come alone. Obviously not, but she anticipated that. Everyone gets knocked out before the big fight scene.
Yeah. I love how he did send the message via arrow. Like, I'm gonna prove how useful this is, guys. Look, see? Message arrow. Perfect. Which also, you know, goes against his claim that he didn't have any more trick arrows, but I guess that must have been one of the ones they recovered. So, yeah, he's got an arrow for everything. And then, yeah, the whole fight scene. Again, I really appreciate sort of showing the kind of, like, the competence that Clint has at this stuff. It's like, it's not amazing, but it's very solid of, like, he's able to take out all the tracksuit guys before getting to Maya to have a one-on-one with her. Because, like, of course he knew she wasn't going to come alone. You know, she's not an idiot. So, yeah.
Yeah, he takes out her right-hand man before moving on to the others, you know? And she doesn't notice at first because, you know, she can't hear the fight. But they move on to the fight pretty quickly. And, you know, she kicks ass, man. Just the whole fight scene, beautifully choreographed. The fact that, you know, she gets the upper hand several times, but Clint manages to get back up and parry and everything and finally pins her down. You know, and she's like, all right, you know, do it, kill me. And he just reveals his face, which I'm just like, oh, okay. Because, you know, for a split second there, I genuinely thought that Clint was going to kill her, you know, just to stop the madness, knowing that she's not going to stop because she's just hell-bent on finding and taking her revenge on Ronan. So when he revealed himself, I'm like, oh, okay. And then he's like, yeah, I know what you're talking about here. And then sure enough, reverses Uno the situation, and he's the one getting pinned down, but only for him to tell Maya, like, hey, there's an informant within your group. That's how I knew that your father and all those people were going to meet up that night. And she's just like, liar. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it's the pretty boy. The pretty boy's the informant. That was literally my first thought.
Yeah, good for you for guessing that. For me, I wasn't as focused on the informant. I was just like, that's interesting. Like, why does... At that point, I was already assuming that Kingpin was in charge. I'm like, why did Kingpin want him out of the way? So that's interesting. And again, it also plays into kind of what we were talking about before of how, like, this idea of justice is so deeply limited, because it's like, you know, he didn't, Clint again, didn't know the full story of why this guy was doing what he was doing, and even why it was he was given this information. You know, he ended up being, in his attempt to destroy organized crime, he became a tool of organized crime.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. I do wish that, like, again, like I'd mentioned in the last episode, that like there was like a moment of introspection for Clint in terms of thinking about, you know, like just like who he's killing and why, you know, especially in terms of Maya's dad and their situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really hoping she was going to say something and he was going to, you know, come to the realization of like, oh, wow. You know, that was a really bad thing. And I do wish there was more introspection on his part, but I also do appreciate the fact that he specifically kind of lets himself, even though he gets the upper hand for a minute with Maya, turns the tables over kind of on himself and lets himself be vulnerable in that way of like, look, this is who I am. Here is my face. And then tries to have kind of an honest talk with her about, like, you know, don't keep doing this, because I went down that road and it was not a good idea. It didn't lead anywhere good. So, you know, at least he does seem to understand that about his time as Ronin, that, like, that wasn't something he shouldn't have done. But at the same time, I'm also like, I know, you know, I do appreciate your ability to give heart-to-heart talks to, you know, kind of troubled young women. But, you know, you guys are not really the same here, because for you, you weren't going against Thanos, the guy who did kill your family. You were going against sort of the idea of people you thought shouldn't be still alive since your family was dead, you know, which is one of those things where it's like, who, you know, who gave you the right to make that judgment? Clint Barton, you know, You are not God, okay? Don't be doing that. So it's, I wish that were kind of more discussed. Or she said something like, you and I are not the same. You killed my father in cold blood. You know, your family was, again, not trying to trivialize this, but they were randomly dusted by, you know, a genocidal space raisin. And it would be one thing if Clint was going after the space raisin, but he wasn't. He was going after people who had nothing to do with the snap. So,
yeah, that whole fight scene and then conversation afterwards was very intense. And I was at the edge of my seat. I loved it. And of course, you know, once Maya got the upper hand, I knew that was when Kate showed up. And sure enough, you know, just manages to shoot her in a way that makes her drop her weapon, giving Clint enough time to escape and retrieve the arrow that Kate had shot, and then they both make their escape with an Uber. Gotta appreciate that. I honestly appreciate the realism of making an escape, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Again, we kind of see Kate being, despite her, you know, really big blind spots, is occasionally very savvy of like, well, I don't need to, you know, have a big fancy getaway car. If we get away in an Uber, we're going to be very hard to find that way.
Exactly.
Just because it'll be pretty inconspicuous. So,
yeah, no, it's a little thing, but I appreciated it nonetheless. And meanwhile, Maya makes her own getaway with the motorcycle, only to talk to her right-hand man and question him, where were you that night? And he's just like, what are you talking about? That night, he was killed. Where were you, you know? You know, despite the fact that she got really ticked off at Clint, there's that seed of doubt. And I'm thinking, it was him. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, how messed up would that be that, he's the one who gave Clint that info about, you know, that meeting that led to Maya's father's death or whatever. And the fact that he's so close to her now, I figured, oh my god, that'd be so messed up. So part of me, like, really hopes, though, that it was him, that he was the informant. Because I'm thinking, oh my god, why would they do the things that they do? Why would the Kingpin want, like, someone killed in his own organization? I don't know. But either way, I'm like, let it be him. Let him be the informant. I need this. I just, let this happen. I want Maya to punch him. I don't know why. I just do.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There's a lot of guys who need punching at some point in this story.
Right?
You know, Yelena needs to punch Clint. Maya needs to punch Kazi. And also Clint, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know we were talking in the previous podcast segment that we weren't sure if Clint knew that the Black Widow who attacked him was Yelena or not, but we have confirmation during the Uber ride that he had no idea who she was until Kate herself was like, yeah, so she confronted me in my apartment. She says she's Natasha's sister, and Clint at first like, what? But then he's like, oh, because I'm guessing Natasha obviously spoke to Clint about Yelena, but he probably didn't have much of a description of her other than blonde white gal, you know, with a Russian accent. So this was definitely the first meeting.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was talking about at the beginning when I was like, we had a lot of questions and we got answers, like, we were all kind of like, what's up? Does he know who Yelena is? Does he know? And then it's like immediately in this episode, it's like, okay, so he knows who Yelena is generally, but he did not know that that was Yelena. Which also makes me wonder, you know, in terms of Yelena interacting with Kate as much as she does, I wonder if Yelena has doubts about the case, you know, like maybe talking to Kate, maybe, you know, at some point, something that she heard. I mean, because I know in the Black Widow movie, there when they're kind of running from Taskmaster at the beginning, Natasha is saying, oh, Clint and I, we hung out in this like subway tunnel in Budapest for a while when we were on a mission.
Yeah.
And so maybe, you know, Natasha said enough stuff like that about Clint that Yelena's like, would he really have done this? You know, I've got to investigate. I got to be sure before I kill him.
Yeah, because it's clear that Yelena did some digging only to find out that Eleanor was being employed by the Kingpin. So, okay, you know, apparently Julia Louise Dreyfus Valentina was hired by Eleanor to kill Clint, you know. And yet Eleanor herself was working for the Kingpin. It's all this tangled mess of conspiracy, who works for who. It's all very, very shady, you know, just, okay, you know, this criminal underbelly is really getting deep here. It's pretty insane. And I honestly can't wait for the next episode just because I really want that conversation with Yelena and Clint. Like, just tell me, did you kill her? And Clint would just be like, no, she wouldn't let me fall. I wouldn't let her fall. She forced my hand. You know, I want that conversation. I want a little bit of fighting between them, but I want that conversation in the end.
Yeah. I also wonder if it'll play out like Yelena shows up and she's like, what are you responsible for her death? And then Clint's like, yes. And then immediately Yelena starts like attacking him harder. And then Kate's like, no, that's not how it went down. Clint, stop being metaphorical.
Yeah, I want
I know
that
you
too.
Feel guilty, but not the same thing.
Oh man, it's the little things we ask for. I mean, we already got Kingpin. I'm satisfied. Will Jack be gone for the rest of the show? Unfortunately, no. I'm guessing whatever his deal is, he'll come back and be like, yeah, I'm in jail, or, oh, Eleanor, why'd you frame me? Not cool. I think this engagement needs to be postponed, at least. I don't know.
Yeah, we should go to couples counseling or something.
Right?
you know, I don't want to say, like, break it off. I still think there's good stuff here. I mean, you framed me for murder, but, you know,
we can move past that.
We can still work it out. Yeah.
So, I'm trying to think if there was anything else that happened.
Yeah. All right, well, I was going to say, is anything else about the episode?
I feel like there was maybe a little less Christmas music this time.
They ended the episode with the Grinch song. Like, what?
I didn't say there was no Christmas music, no, but it was a little less.
It just kills me that of all the songs they could have ended it with, it's the Grinch song. I lost my mind. Oh yeah. My gosh. And yes, there was a little less Christmas music. I appreciated that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess Kingpin is the Grinch in this scenario, since they immediately cut from that reveal to that song.
So good. So good. But otherwise, I have no further thoughts, and I'm genuinely excited for the next episode.
Yeah. The only kind of random note I have is, well, I've got a couple of them, and they're all about costumes.
Nice.
We hear that the costumes for Clint and Kate are ready, so.
Ooh, costume reveal.
Yeah, we might be seeing those in the next episode. And then the series will end with Laura divorcing Clint for wearing his Hawkeye costume.
Sorry, babe, it's over. Thanks for getting back my watch, yeah. But can't do it.
it'll be kind of a similar scenario to like Eleanor and Jack being like, it's framing me for murder. Yeah, that, like, I can deal with that. She'll be like, okay, murderous rampage and all the superhero shenanigans, I can deal with that. But this costume, no,
that's
no,
the deal breaker.
Yeah. The other costuming note I had was that I noticed that Yelena's style, to me, mirrors what she was wearing in the end of the Black Widow movie. So we only see her in kind of one outfit at the end there, but it seemed to be very much in sync with the couple outfits we see her wearing in this series. And I just wanted to say I really like that, because she's got kind of a very, like, quirky style. Like, there's a lot of jewelry, there's a lot of, like, mixed prints and, like, embellished details. And one of my favorite scenes from Black Widow is her talking about how, like, she bought the vest with the pockets, and, like, this is the first thing she's...
Yes!
The pockets! Yeah. I like your vest. I knew it! It's cool, right?
Yeah, her style is very interesting. I really like it.
Yeah, but I also like the idea that, you know, the vest was the first thing she ever got to buy for herself. Like, everything else was something she was made to wear, or it's, like, these very utilitarian uniforms. And then it's interesting to see the contrast with Natasha, where, like, Natasha, when she's out of the Black Widow gear, a lot of the time she's wearing very kind of comfortable, understated, a lot of, like, blacks and grays. At least more recently, I know we talked about her style being a little bit all over the place.
Yeah.
And then Yelena is different in that once she can get out of her Black Widow gear, she gets very kind of quirky and creative, and really, you know, uses a lot of stuff, a lot of kind of, not, I need a better word than stuff, but it's just not coming. she plays with a lot of textures and prints that you can't incorporate into a uniform, and so it's, to me, it's cool to see her, like, asserting her individuality.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah, really like her style. I was noting her hair in the episode. I'm like, oh, she did something different with her hair, you know. I know nothing about hair, really, something with the bangs, but either way, I really liked it.
Yeah. Well, it's also one of the few times we see her hair just fully down, aside from when she was a little kid. Because, again, I'm sorry to kind of turn this podcast into the Black Widow movie podcast, Caroline's thoughts, because I just watched it. But in that movie, one of the things I noticed about a lot of the women, except for Nat, who just kind of likes to let her hair go all over the place, But a lot of the other women, like Yelena and Melina, both have a lot of braids going on. Like, they generally have their hair back in like a braid or a ponytail, so it's out of their face whenever they're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So with Yelena, she mostly has that braid crown going on or a ponytail. And so
I'm obsessed with the braid crown, braid crowns in Black Widow. Yeah. Like, I'm obsessed with them.
I really love that too, because that's an aspect. And, you know, this isn't the first like female led superhero movie to comment on that, but I do think it's kind of funny that the other one is in Birds of Prey. There's like a great scene where one of the women, when they're fighting, gives the other woman a hair tie and so she can pull her hair back out of her face. And then in Black Widow, you have a lot of female characters who have their hair up out of their face, in styles that, you know, that's the cool thing about braids is that they do hold. So if you want a style that's going to hold for a long time, and while you're doing some rough stuff, it's like braids are real good for that. So instead of like having a perfect blowout that is always in their face when they're trying to fight, the women in those, in that movie, a lot of them have sensible hairstyles. And so,
Yeah.
I really like the braids as well. But, you know, at the same time, I agree with Jen that I do like to see her with her hair down. Cause again, that's an example of like getting to see her outside of that role, you know? So it's cool to see her in a non-action context for a little bit, just like, you know, chilling and having some boxed mac and cheese with lots of hot sauce.
Lots of hot sauce.
Yeah. I also liked Kate's line when Yelena's like, "It smells good, doesn't it?" And Kate's like, "Yeah, I know boxed mac and cheese. It's delicious." And not like, "So it's just boxed mac and cheese." It's like, "Yeah, boxed mac and cheese. It's delicious." I'm like, "Ah, yes. The life of the single gal."
Yeah, so honestly, does anyone else have any final thoughts on costuming, characters, dialogue, anything?
I'm glad they got me interested enough to care about what happens in the finale.
Ooh, that's impressive. Yeah.
Yep. They somehow did it, despite the low expectations, despite the lukewarm response of like the first episode. Here we are. Genuinely excited to see this ugly Christmas sweater plot thread, you know, happen.
Yeah, and hopefully if we're good, we can get some Laura cookies.
Oh yes, please. I need Laura in my life all day, every day.
Laura cookies.
But yeah, I agree. Despite the profound feelings of meh that I had going into this, I am now looking forward to the finale. So
for sure,
that's good. Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, not bad, Hawkeye. Not bad. Just, you got us interested. Cool. Can't wait to see what happens. And wow, can't believe they finally bring in the Kingpin. I'm pretty pleased about that.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, it sounds like we're all ready to wrap up here. So thank you all so much for listening to us on Nerd Alert Girls. Thank you for your support. Tell your friends about it. Review us on Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. If you want to keep up with us, follow us on nerdalertgirls.tumblr.com. In the meantime, we will work on, you know, reviewing that Hawkeye finale for you, and also watching Spider-Man for No Way Home. I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. It'll be fine. In addition to holidays and, like, me traveling out of town, it's going to be a lot, you guys. So, if there are some delays in podcast releasing, I hope you will have some grace for us. But, yes. Otherwise, yeah, thank you all so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on
Nerd Alert!
Ladies, all right. See y'all next time.
Stay safe and stay nerdy out there.